Hello, I'm Merc the Meek, and welcome to the finale for our RPG A Day 2026 genre experiment. This is another episode graciously put together by Jason over at the Nerds RPG Variety Cast. So this is basically just me rebroadcasting. It's a long one, so I say we just get into it. Jason, take it away.
Welcome back to Nerds RPG Variety Cast. I'm your host, Jason. As you may know, this month of August, all month, I've been celebrating RPG Day 2026, a project that Autocratic came up with and has been heavily supported by Anthony over at the Casting Shadows blog, the Runeslinger YouTube channel. Merc the Meek, over the Merc the Meek podcast, came up with the idea of doing a survey of RPGs of different genres. So the idea here is, each week, well, or each set of days, we would pick an RPG genre, like D&D type RPGs, or horror RPGs, or sci-fi RPGs. And Merc asked people to call in with their favorite RPG in that genre, with their favorite module in that genre, if they have one, and then some media influences they have that influence their games or inspire their games in that genre. And we've been doing that all week. If you look in the back, or all month, and you look in the back episodes, I've rebroadcast these. Merc has also put these out on his own. But since we've been doing that, we've gotten feedback after those episodes. We've gotten late calls for the genres, and we've gotten thoughts that people have had after they listened to those episodes. And this is a feedback episode to kind of finish up the month of August. You know, hashtag RPG A Day 2026. So I'm going to break these down by genre. So I'll do all the feedback for D&D as genre first and so on. And then I'll do general calls after that. So this first call, we're going to start with D&D as genre. And the first call is one I sent in after the D&D as genre episode. So I'm going to play that call by myself. And then I will play other calls we received on D&D as genre. And then we'll go from there. Hey, so one book I didn't mention I should have really is Dr. Eric J. Holmes's Mazes of Peril. It's a little bit hard to find. I don't think there's digital out there unless there's a pirated copy. So you have to find a physical copy. And, you know, the original from Black Blade Press, the original printing was expensive. I think they're going to reprint it. Maybe they already have. But Mazes of Peril is definitely worth tracking down. I guess Black Blade Press is a reprint of the original. I forget who originally printed it. But anyway, it was kind of based on Holmes's campaign with his kids playing D&D, you know, at that time be Holmes D&D or basic OD&D, right? And to me, it feels a little more like Tunnels and Trolls. It's pretty whimsical. You know, there's a scene in there where there's a courtroom and a centaur is in the courtroom for being rowdy in a bar and his foot breaks through the courtroom floor. You know, so kind of silly stuff like that, but it's definitely fully D&D. You know, they mention levels in there, characters having levels, and they use the terms and all the stuff. You know, it's 100% a D&D novel. And if you can find it, I highly recommend it. It's pretty good. As far as D&D being its own genre, by third edition, 100%, one of the design goals of third edition was to make D&D self-referential. To stop referring to real-world myths, stop referring to real-world stuff, and to make it its own thing. So from D&D 3.0, I guess, on, it 100% is its own genre intentionally. Prior to that, of course, we have a lot of references to historical myths and real-life cultures and things like that. And I think they were trying to tap into that more universal idea that you could play in any world with it. But that was up to the Dungeon Master and the players on what they were going to do. So, but now I'm being interrupted, so I'm going to cut this short. Bye.
Jason and Merc, it's Harrigan again. I know I'm late, but I thought I would just sneak in my own D&D entry here. I can be very quick. For a rule set, I'm going to go with the OSR generally. I think that you know, the older games are nostalgic, but I think they all have some pretty rough edges. And I think a lot of different OSR games have really sanded those down in a wonderful way to make them more playable, to make them still sort of pluck the heartstrings and all that sort of stuff. So the OG here for me is still AD&D First Edition. I mean, those books picture those iconic first three books. They're just core to the entire hobby. So I think there's no escaping that. I would rather play OSR, but I think if we're talking about like what the, you know, what the real, you know, the real basis of all this is, it's AD&D. Modules, I will throw out Against the Cult of the Reptile God. Love that module. And then my probably my personal favorite, I remember running this in high school, was the Forgotten Temple of Therizdun. I think people these days say Therizdun, and it's probably spelled that way, but I will always say Therizdun. Media. Quickly here, The Hobbit is definitely the book that first got me interested in D&D, sort of in that headspace. I would also say the Sinbad movies, particularly Seventh Voyage of Sinbad and Golden Voyage of Sinbad. And then maybe in more modern terms, I mean, there's so many movies that I think you could aim in the right direction if you're a little open to what D&D is about, right? If it's not about a party trying to get treasure, but it's instead about adventure and exploring incredible spaces and meeting incredible things and monsters and all that sort of stuff. I would point to The Green Knight, recent movie that I really, really liked, and The Northman, two just awesome films. All right. Hopefully you'll sneak this in, and if not, it'll be on the cutting room floor and no one will ever hear it. I'll be sad. Thanks, guys.
Hi, guys. This is Peter, also known as Space Baby on the Discords, Blue Sky, pretty much everywhere. I'm pulling a little bit of a Chris Nolan here, and I'm doing the first one last. So a bit of a timey-wimey reply. But here's my call-in about D&D. D&D. First game I played was Moldvay Basic. Second game I played, I think, was Top Secret. But with D&D, in the 70s, when I, 80s, when I started, the habit was to kind of use everything you got. So we got Moldvay, then we got a player's handbook, or we got a DMG. I think my first hardcover book was Deities and Demigods. And we were all kids, so we were all drawn towards the word advanced and thought that was the thing that we needed to do. I like D&D. I don't love D&D, but I love a lot of the stuff that has come from D&D. I would say my top game, my top D&D games would all be retro clones or reissues or reimaginings. I like OSE, but I like OSE Advanced. I like Beyond the Wall. I like, God, what else? Basic Fantasy. I think there's some interesting things in Castles and Crusades. But by and large, for D&D, I'm off-brand all the way. And because of that, my favorite has to be Hyperborea. It's kind of a hybrid of basic OD&D and first edition, but much simpler than first. It runs real fast. It's really stripped down, but has some nice, interesting optional crunch if you want it. So Hyperborea would be my rules chassis that I would use, my D&D. I generally play all my fantasy with Hyperborea. I don't really consider it sword and sorcery per se, because I think I mentioned elsewhere, it's a little too easy on magic. It tries to hone closer to D&D spellcasters than what I think sword and sorcery really is. For an adventure, this one also kind of plagued me a little bit. I love a lot of the old adventures, but I haven't played them in a very long time. I think that Keep on the Borderlands is pretty cool. Hamlet is really cool. Cult of the Lizard, whatchamacallit. I always confuse it with the Skirples one. I think it's great. My favorite from a plot kind of idea point is Expedition to the Barrier Peaks, but I really don't like how high level it is. High level play is not really the sweet spot for D&D. So the one I'm going to list as my favorite is probably the first one that I ran seriously, you know, which would be White Plume Mountain. I think White Plume Mountain, that fifth level is the sweet spot for AD&D. White Plume Mountain is a great mix of, you know, a little past zero to hero to fetch quest to a lot of fantasy tropes to let's put in some of the source material with Elric's sword being in there, basically. Black Razor is it's basically stolen from Elric. I think it's a really good dungeon and a really good adventure, and I think that would be my high point. That would be the one I would recommend. As for media, I mean, my media book-wise, my media back in the day was the Guardians of the Flame trilogy series by Joel Rosenberg. I mean, one of the progenitors of lit RPG, as much as I hate that class, that category of genre, whatever you want to call it, what it's become. But the story of college kids basically playing D&D and then being transported to the world inside the bodies of their characters and them having to deal with it. I was enwrapped with those books when I was in grade 5, 6. I shouldn't have been reading them when I was in grade 5, 6. I don't know if they really hold up because there's a lot of content in there that we've moved past that was big in the 70s and 80s. I mean, just see my call on Wild Cards in the Supers call. So that would be the fiction one, but I love those books. From film, TV, it's a weird one. My high point of D&D film has to be the Western Silverado. I've mentioned this before in passing. I think Silverado, if you watch it with a D&D or a RPG lens on or glasses on, it's incredible. It plays out like a session at the table where it's a duet play and then they add a second character and a meet cute and he has some backstory fulfilling little side adventures as they go to get the third character who's playing a different game than everybody else, and then they find a fourth character, and then they build the party, and then they go on an adventure together, which was a side quest, and then their campfire scene is exactly like a D&D campfire scene, and then they all have their own backstories combined to have a big show off in the end. And, you know, like a lot of modern D&D, everyone kind of falls in love with the weird freak NPC of Stella at the bar. that's the goblin in the corner. Sorry. It's the goblin in the corner that everyone falls in love with. It's a D&D movie to me. Please, if you haven't seen Silverado, go back and watch it like you're watching a role playing game. It's really kind of funny. Anyway, thanks for this wonderful series of calls. It's a great way to do RPG a day. I really didn't have the energy to do daily posts this year, and so this was a great way to contribute. So thanks to everyone involved.
Harrigan and Peter, thank you for those follow-up calls to D&D as a genre. I can see Silverado as a D&D movie when you frame it like that. 100%. I haven't seen that movie for years. I need to rewatch it and maybe in that lens. That's really interesting. I don't disagree with your points, Peter, about magic, but we'll maybe talk about that more after we do the sword and sorcery feedback for that episode. Peter has a couple more calls coming up here, so we'll play those. Harrigan, thank you for calling in. Harrigan has agreed he's going to come back on, and we're going to talk more about superhero RPGs, which is kind of a favorite of his and a hobby of his, collecting those and looking at all the different ones. So we'll have that another episode of that coming up, probably October, though, because here at the end of September, I'm going to ShireCon up in Connecticut, and during that weekend, right now, I'm scheduled to be in a Villains and Vigilantes game, a DC Heroes game, and a Marvel Superheroes game. So we'll be playing three different superhero RPGs that weekend. And then coming fresh off of that, actually, I hope to record some talks with other people that are in some or all those games. to discuss the different systems. And then after that, I'm going to bring in Harrigan and we'll talk about that. So that's something to look forward to maybe in October, is another superhero episode. But thank you again for those calls, gentlemen. And now let's move on to the next genre. The next one we did were superheroes. Some of a playback feedback specific to superheroes.
Hi, Jason. Hi, Merc. This is Peter, also known as Space Baby. I am calling in about our supers, RPG a day, loves and favorites. So my favorite rule set of the ones I've played has to be Games Workshop's old Golden Heroes. It's janky, it's old, but I'm not sure there's a better one to emulate the Bronze Age comics. I love it. It's got some really interesting mechanics, great random character generation, and is just a lot of fun. Of the ones I haven't played, I think in the future one of my favorites will probably be Spectaculars. Haven't gotten it to the table. I've owned it for years. It looks wonderful, and every person I've met who's played it thinks it's great. As for media, besides the Justice League Unlimited cartoon, which I think is fabulous, my touch points for media, I think, would have to be Kurt Busiek's Astro City comic series, which I think delves into the tropes and the genre so well. It's a high recommend for anyone who likes superheroes. And one of the best things going for it is the fact that it's not attached to either of the two big comic book universes. So it really takes some original takes, which is cool. The other big media, which I don't know if has aged super well these days, but the original Wild Cards books, those are great. Those are great for any gamer who wants to delve into supers, or any supers fan who wants to read some novels, some sci-fi. Great characters, interesting world building. As I said, haven't really aged much. Great. There's some content in there that really hasn't aged. But by and large, they're a great series. And as for adventure, I'm not sure there has been a good supers adventure. It's so specific. Everybody has their own, every GM has their own idea of what their supers world is going to be like. And I really think it's hard to take a off-the-shelf adventure and put it into your own world. But for supplements, I'd have to turn back to Wild Cards. I think it's the supers world that's been adapted the most prolifically. Is it two, if not three, different Wild Card supplements for two or three different game systems? I mean, it coming from an original playgroup of Superworld and then turning into novels and then coming back into RPGs is kind of cool. But I would say the Wild Card supplements might be the best supplements for a Supers game. And finally, I'm really surprised that no one mentioned 5e D&D in this category, because there's some really interesting Supers playing with that game. Anyway, I'll leave that for further discussion. Thanks, guys. Keep it up.
Thank you for that follow-up call. I really appreciate it, Peter. You know, that's interesting. I've never read any of the Wild Card stuff. I'm aware of it, and I'm aware of the game supplements and all that. I've never read any of those novels. I just looked on Wikipedia, and there's a ton of Wild Card novels and stories. I don't know. I don't know if that's something I want to dive into at the moment or not. I've got a bunch of projects on my plate, so I don't know if I want to add that, but I may. That's really interesting. As far as the cartoons, yeah, the DC Animated Universe, you know, the Batman, the animated series, and Superman, the animated series, and Justice League Unlimited, Batman Beyond, those really are the pinnacle of superhero cartoons, no question about it. I still go back to them today. I still think they're the best versions. That's still my idealized version of DC, right? Marvel's never been as good. I mean, there are some Marvel cartoons that I've enjoyed over the years, but they've never been as good as that. Recently, on a recommendation, I've started watching some of the Avengers cartoons that Marvel put out in the early 20-teens. There's Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, and that goes on to another. There's two seasons of that, and that goes on another series. And they're not bad, actually. They're kind of interesting. It's interesting because, obviously, they're supposed to be cinematic tie-ins. You can tell by just watching them. You know, Hydra is a big bad guy. Because this is the beginning of the MCU. 2010 is the first series, and that's what I'm watching right now, versus Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes. And we've got Hulk still as the villain, and or kind of, sort of. And anyway, it goes back. It's got those original characters. But Kang is introduced, like, in the third or fourth episode. And Kang was introduced really early on, which is interesting, because it makes you wonder how early they were thinking about the whole Kang storyline that they've now dumped and transitioned to Doctor Doom. But it makes you wonder, Kevin Feige and those guys, how early Kang was on their plate, because he's here in 2010 in the cartoons that are definitely supposed to allude towards the movies and get excitement towards the movies that haven't come out yet. So it's kind of interesting there. But thank you for that call. And now we're going to move on to our next genre. I mentioned I've got some other calls, but the calls that are kind of combining everything together, like the BJ Boyd has sent in, I'm going to play at the end after all the specific genre ones. So BJ, I haven't ignored your calls. So the next genre specific were sword and sorcery. So that I have feedback for. So let's play the sword and sorcery feedback calls.
Hi guys, it's Peter, aka Space Baby, on the Discords in Blue Sky, just calling in with a follow-up on Sword and Sorcery. My Sword and Sorcery call. I forgot to mention one key thing. The difference between playing a Conan game and playing a Sword and Sorcery game. I mentioned all this stuff for Sword and Sorcery that I like, but if I were to play a Conan game, I would just play Conan 2D20, which I love. I think it's a great game. I think it captures Conan in a very fun way, even though, yes, it's a little crunchy, and yes, it has probably one, maybe even too many metacurrencies. But I think Conan 2D20 and all its source books are probably one of the best iterations of a Conan game. The other thing I didn't mention is magic. Magic in Sword and Sorcery. Many people say that magic and how Sword and Sorcery treats magic is the difference between Sword and Sorcery and high fantasy or just fantasy gaming. I tend to agree. And the way I look at magic in Sword and Sorcery games is kind of how I've looked at magic in Call of Cthulhu for as long as I've played that game. In Call of Cthulhu, it would be really surprising if a keeper started all the players off with spells or knowledge of spells. And that's kind of how I view magic in Sword and Sorcery games. At the outset, player characters probably shouldn't have access to magic. It should be something that's experienced and accumulated over time. And when it is experienced or accumulated, it should scare the living hell out of them. If it's used against them, it should be incredibly scary, it should be dangerous, and if they accumulate it to use for themselves, just the thought of using it should have a massive cost. It should be really dangerous, and that should be in the mechanics of the magic. Anyway, that's how I view magic in Sword and Sorcery games. It's almost exactly like how I view magic in Call of Cthulhu. Anyway, thanks, guys.
Peter, thank you for that call. Really appreciate it. And I love that take on Sword and Sorcery magic. I agree with you 100%. Maybe not on 2D20, but on the idea that magic should be dangerous, characters should be scared to use it, and there should be serious consequences for it. You know, interesting enough, the TSR's Conan role-playing game that came out in the 80s that had a universal chart, kind of like Marvel Superheroes, that game has magic that way. Magic has serious consequences, and it basically says you really don't want to be a caster as a PC, but if you do, here's a way to do it, and here's all the bad things that happen because you're a caster, right? So it you know, that game really reinforced that hard, and that was kind of cool. I'm going to run that at ShireCon too as an off the books game. So I'll definitely have an episode afterwards with somebody, I don't know who, or maybe a group of people talking about the TSR Conan game. But yeah, it's interesting because a lot of these games, like Hyperborea is a great game, right? But Hyperborea magic isn't scary. It's just common, you know, pretty complex. You got a ton of different spellcasting classes, and yeah, things can happen, but is it really, you know, are you discouraged from being a magic user? No, not really. You know, same thing with a lot of these games. You know, Barbarians of Lemuria, no, it doesn't really penalize you for being a caster in that game at all. Even though I love that as a sword and sorcery game, that's kind of a, you know, it doesn't hit that dark side like I'd like it to. Reaver by Raven Guy Games does have negative, you can miscast and you can get corruption and things like that can happen, and there can be bad effects. So Reaver has it some. Maybe not as much as I would personally like, but I think Reaver is probably a decent balance of that. So it's there. But yeah, I definitely like the magic is scary, and magic should be scary. And even if you are a player character, magic should be scary to use. So I think the Call of Cthulhu analogy is pretty apt there. Very, very cool. Thank you for saying that. I'm going to keep that in my hip pocket for the future. Okay, our next call is from Bob of the Safeco Cast. The Safeco Cast is a traveler-centric podcast. It's a pretty cool podcast if you're into Traveler. I highly recommend you check it out. Even if you're not into Traveler, if you're into sci-fi games and stuff, there's a lot of interesting things on there to pick up and listen to. So, still recommended. But I'm going to play Bob's call now, and this is in response to our sci-fi as genre episode.
Hi, Jason. This is Bob from Safeco Cast. I've been listening to all your RPG A Day podcasts, and they've all been really fun to listen to. Really enjoyed the one on science fiction recently, and I was a little late getting to it, I suppose, but here I am now. And I guess it won't surprise anyone to know that my preferred science fiction game is Traveler, based on the fact that I run a Traveler podcast. I'm not sure I've ever played any other science fiction role-playing games. Probably the closest I've come is Gamma World, and I'm not sure how science fiction that would really be considered. So, yeah, Traveler is basically it for me. I think it's kind of really synonymous with science fiction role-playing to me. Like classic Traveler, but I'm a little bit more familiar with Mongoose second edition these days than I have been, because I've been playing in some pickup games with that. So it's a lot of fun. I just like the system a lot. As far as favorite modules go, I really like the Double Adventure from Game Designers Workshop for Classic Traveler, Horde, and the Chamax Plague. And those both deal with kind of, you know, space monster, bug, creature, invasion kind of things. And they're a lot of fun. As far as media goes, although, you know, I grew up watching Star Trek and all of that stuff, most of my inspirational material now is from novels. I've been reading a lot of space opera stuff for the last few years, going through the science fiction of Traveler book by Apple Klein, which explores some of the novels and series that inspired Mark when he was writing the game. But I guess, as far as science fiction novels that aren't in that book, I really like the Alan Dean Foster Humanx Commonwealth books. Over the last few years, I've read all of the standalone Commonwealth novels. I'm about halfway through the Pip and Flinks novels, which are set in that same setting. And there might be one trilogy that I'm missing at this point. I read the Ice Rigger trilogy too, but they're really well written, good science fiction adventures, and kind of planet hopping in a way. So lots of great ideas for, you know, settings in my game. So I like that stuff quite a lot. But yeah, I'm 61, about to turn 62. I was born in 1964. And during my early childhood, Saturday morning was full of science fiction in the form of cartoons. So I grew up watching the Herculoids and Frankenstein Jr. and stuff like that. And I, from a very young age, I was watching Lost in Space and all of that kind of thing. So I guess it was the space race time, right? And, you know, you could buy lots of space toys, like, you know, toy ray guns and robots and all of that. So that really kind of formed a lot of my identity, and I've never outgrown it. So anyway, keep up the good work on the podcast, man. It's really good to have something interesting to listen to. Take care.
Bob, thank you for that call. Really appreciate it. Yeah, I think Traveler's a neat game. It's maybe not quite as heroic as I think some people like to play, but it's one of those games you want to be careful. You don't want to get in fights. It's kind of like Boot Hill. You don't get in fights because they're deadly, right? But it is a really neat game. There's a ton of stuff out there for Traveler. You know, it's been supported over the decades very well. A great community around it. You know, it's got its own convention. You know, as you've been to, you talk about it over on the Safeco Cast. And I still feel, and I might have mentioned this in my call during the Sci-Fi's Genre episode, but I think the Traveler book is about the perfect all-in-one RPG book. I think it's even better than a rule encyclopedia. I think the Traveler book is it's perfect, right? Very, very cool. And Traveler is one of those games I've always admired. I had it back in the day as a kid. I had the Traveler starter set was my first Traveler books. Which were the, you know, the box, and they're like full size, but they were basically the little black books. Was that like 80, 83 or something like that? And now you've got about a decade on me, but not quite. But so that was my first introduction to Traveler. And then I bought, you know, different classic Traveler things since then. I never really got into the Third Imperium setting, to be honest, but the rule set and some of the stuff always appealed to me a little bit. So Traveler's always been there as that, you know, game I'd love to get in a campaign of and just never have, maybe someday. But very cool game. I have not read those books you recommended. I will check those out. They sound great. I'm always on the hunt for great sci-fi books and recommendations, so I will check those out, definitely. Thank you so much for the call. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to, you know, I need to go back and plumb the depths of your previous episodes over there, Safeco Cast, but you know, because I'm sure there's a lot of great stuff there, but I look forward to future episodes as well. Okay, this next call we're going to get is kind of a combo call. This is from BJ Boyd of the Arcane Alienist, and he sent it in. It's kind of his thoughts after listening to all the RPG as genre episodes. So it's a little bit long, and it's a little heavy on the comic book stuff, but it's still a lot of interesting stuff. BJ's a super smart guy, a lot smarter than I am, and I really appreciate what he has to bring to the table, his experience and his, you know, thoughts and all that. So I'm going to turn it over to BJ.
Hey, Merc and Jason, it's BJ. I apologize for not keeping up with each episode and contributing as I had intended to this month. My bad on that. So I thought I'd send in some thoughts for the final episode. And I'm going to try to offer a lot of what I might have said would just repeat what a lot of other people said. So I'm going to try to offer some new thoughts here on everything you've said, but then also some of the kind of, I guess, overlap between the genres you covered. So you covered D&D, which I think is sort of a stand-in for sort of high fantasy, not quite, but distinct from, of course, the episode on sword and sorcery. And then we also have superhero espionage slash detective. Science fiction and horror. One thing I wanted to point out is that comic books, like superhero comics, kind of do all that. I think by default, you know, superhero is science fantasy. And depending on the character, or the series, it may lean a little more fantasy, a little more science or sci-fi. But then again, when you talk about big shared comic book universes like the Marvel universe and the DC universe, you've got, you know, everything in there, and you've got characters that reflect all those genres. So for science fiction, that's kind of your default bulk of our well-known heroes. Superman, of course, he's an alien, so his fantastic powers are sort of based in science, or at least kind of pseudoscience, right? Spider-Man, the Hulk, Iron Man, Green Lantern, the Fantastic Four, those are all real sci-fi based, and can, you know, depending on what adventures you're looking at with the Fantastic Four, or like the Silver Surfer, who kind of comes in there, you can get into some kind of space opera stuff, or with like Guardians of the Galaxy, right? Or Adam Strange from DC. You got more fantasy leaning characters like Wonder Woman, Thor, the DC's Captain Marvel, which most people might think of more as under the name Shazam, and of course his counterpart Black Adam. With detective and espionage, I mean Batman, Daredevil, Nick Fury, Black Widow, anything involving S.H.I.E.L.D. in a Marvel, or you know, Checkmate, the organization in DC Comics. Captain America, depending on the writer and the story arc, can lean really into more espionage kinds of comics. In fact, the one that gave us the Winter Soldier storyline, which I would highly recommend as a comic, people find that collection and read. It's amazing, by Ed Brubaker. The Winter Soldier story arc with Captain America, really good stuff. With Sword and Sorcery, DC's a warlord. Planet Hulk, even though Hulk is probably more typically a sci-fi hero, if you read the Planet Hulk, it was basically the premise for Planet Hulk was, let's write a Conan story starring the Hulk. So, and of course you've got Conan and Red Sonja comic books, historically and contemporarily, to lean into Sword and Sorcery as well. With horror, of course, Ghost Rider, Swamp Thing, Blade, John Constantine give us aspects of horror. I would also recommend checking out the CrossGen universe if you can find them. They had this meta plot for all their comics. They specifically leaned into genres that were not typical superhero genres. So they had a space opera, science fantasy, pardon my dog's barking, high fantasy, a mythic fantasy, a sword and sorcery. They had a character that was, I mean, these are all set on a different world, but there's something going on in the galaxy or the universe. They coexist. They had a detective fiction that was very much a
series based on, the character is based heavily on Sherlock Holmes. It's even set in that sort of, in a weird kind of steampunk version of kind of that era, evokes London. Of course, it's not on Earth, but it evokes that. So CrossGen comics are really, really good for some look at these other genres that you don't, they're not super, they were specifically intended to not be superhero comics. But let's look at, I also wanted to talk about just some of the, just briefly, some of the ways these different genres overlap. So I'm thinking like sci-fi / horror, obviously you think of aliens and stuff like that. Also like Event Horizon, movies like that. And a game that I think captures that well, that's really easy to pick up, obviously you can play the alien game, but Mothership is a real fun game, and it picks up the that genre of sci-fi horror pretty well. So I've enjoyed playing Mothership. I've ran it a couple times. It's a good game for that. When I think of science fantasy, I think it depends. There are two games I think of. If you want to go more pulp, weird fiction science fantasy, Hyperborea, because that creates a world vaguely reminiscent of Robert Howard's Hyborian Age, but you've got buried in there some very some other weird fiction sci-fi stuff, some Lovecraftian stuff, and some stuff from that kind of inspired by Clark Ashton Smith in particular. So for Hyperborea, if you want a more futuristic type of science fantasy, a game that a lot of people don't, I've played a lot, that is really fun, that maybe a lot of people look past, is Coyote and Crow. Which I've talked about a couple times on my show. It envisions a world where the Age of Sail never happened due to a second ice age, and what it would look like in North America if Native Americans had developed their own technology. So it is a science fantasy game, and you can, it's up to the play group whether they want to lean more heavily into including supernatural and fantasy, or if they want it to just be pure sci-fi. But it's a good science fantasy game, I think. And very different from a lot of stuff you might, you know, expect with other science fantasy. So it gives you some new territory to cover. When you blend horror and fantasy, I think Mortborg is kind of the big one right now. Again, it's a really easy one to pick up with some easy to learn rules, very intuitive, and you know, it takes it to the point that it's funny, it's ridiculous, it's over the top. But you could probably scale back some of the humor and do more of a dark fantasy version of that. And again, there are other ones out there. This is the ones I'm familiar with. And then I think sci-fi / investigation. I think Carl has mentioned that Traveler works is his go-to sci-fi. It's probably my go-to sci-fi. And you can put investigation in any other kind of genre that you want, whether, you know, whether it's being a spy, being trying to solve a crime, whether it's being smugglers, you know, criminals, organized crime, or on the side of law and justice. Investigation fits in a lot of places, but for sci-fi investigation, I think Traveler can do a good job of that. And then I kind of always feel like that's where cyberpunk really fits as a genre. I know, and Carl also mentioned it might be its own, you can debate whether it's its own distinct genre at this point, but cyberpunk has the advanced, you know, future kind of tech, but it's also kind of got the dystopian sort of noir inspired kind of world where it's just sort of, you know, everyday people trying to survive in a world where they're never going to be powerful. Cyberpunk tends to, you know, stories and adventures in cyberpunk tend to be more heists, corporate espionage. And so, you can play around with that and do a lot with that. And I think Cyberpunk 2020 is, of course, your kind of go-to game for that. So what else? You guys really, it was kind of interesting. I was surprised you guys didn't bring up Westerns. Of course, the default for Westerns, which is kind of, it's kind of its own genre. It's not a blend of these other ones you talked about. You got Boot Hill, the classic, although I think as Jason will probably point out, Boot Hill kind of is as much a skirmish game as a role-playing game, but you can role-play as a part of that, certainly. And then Savage Worlds is blends Western with fantasy and horror, so you got this kind of weird West, horror-inspired West not Savage Worlds, Deadlands is kind of a fantasy Western, horror Western, where it gets into that. I also think if you're going to kind of look at other variations of blending Westerns with other genres, there's the acid Western game called Frontier Scum that's based on the same kind of mechanics as Mörkborg, and it calls itself an acid Western game, which, you know, is a certain genre of Western film, I think, but it's not really set in our world. It's set in kind of a different world that's just kind of similar to ours, so there is a little bit of a fantasy element to it, if for no other reason that you're clearly not on Earth, at least in the default setting for Frontier Scum. I mentioned Deadlands with fantasy Western. We Deal in Lead, you know, very much inspired by the Dark Tower, is a game that you can do with fantasy Western. And then space Western. Orbital Blues is a game heavily inspired by Cowboy Bebop. I haven't got to get it to the table, but I really am eager. It's on my short list to get to the table and try out. It's a really cool game for space Westerns where you're, again, it's not a kind of epic Western. You know, some people argue that Star Wars is a space Western. It's a science fantasy Western. This is more, you know, you're either a bounty hunter or a smuggler or an enforcer or an investigator. So it kind of gets back into that, throwing a little bit of that, you know, espionage, investigation, crime kind of stuff that goes along with that. But it's also clearly a Western inspired, Western attitude, and in space. So those are some game recommendations. I can't really recommend specific modules for them. A lot of these are kind of newer kind of rules-like games that come with adventure generators or starter modules in the back of the core rule book or the core rule set. So I would just look to those for inspiration. And then, of course, the kind of the movies and literature that pop out of all that. So those are my thoughts on sort of blending genres with role-playing games.
I'm going to break in here real quick just to mention that, yeah, Boot Hill obviously is my choice for a Western. Yeah, the reason we didn't pick Westerns as its own genre thing is I didn't know how much feedback we get. There are a surprising amount of straight Western games out there, though, to be fair, including variants of Savage Worlds. You know, obviously we have Boot Hill, we have Aces and Eights, there's Sidewinder, there's a whole bunch of different just straight up Western games. I know there's a Year Zero Engine Western game out there. There's a whole bunch of them. So the genre is kind of popular. But yeah, we just didn't include that, but maybe we'll include it down in the future. Listen to the end of the episode for that. Thank you for all those thoughts, all your thoughts there. And I think they're all pretty valid and make sense. Now let's hop on to BJ's recommendations.
And since I started off talking about superheroes, I suppose I should recommend some comics since I'm a big comic book reader. A lot of these are going to be older comics. You know, I've not read comics as avidly, you know, the last probably 15 years. You know, once I had a kid, it kind of got hard to keep up with my huge collecting. I used to collect, you know, basically all the major DC and Marvel and stay up on them, so I'm behind on a lot. But here's some good stuff for people who maybe like particularly the well-known superheroes and would like to see some of the seminal comics that I think help really capture who they are. For Batman, I would recommend Batman Year One by John Byrne, and then followed by The Man Who Laughs. I'm blanking on who wrote that. And then The Long Halloween by Jeff Loeb. Really kind of gives you the first two or three years of Batman's career and sort of the modern definition. It's the place where it gives you the origins of Batman, Jim Gordon, Catwoman, Two-Face, and the Joker. And it's what the movies have really drawn on, particularly the Christopher Nolan movies and the new Matt Reeves movies have really drawn heavily on those for their portrayal of related characters. I think for Superman, I would recommend going back to the mid-80s Superman Man of Steel Limited series by John Byrne. That was how they reintroduced sort of the modern version of Superman that we have now following the Crisis on Infinite Earth storyline. So that, and then another one by Jeff Loeb, Superman for All Seasons, that kind of covers the same territory as Man of Steel, but I think it's a little more deep into the personalities and the characters of particularly of Superman, Lois Lane, and Lex Luthor, if I'm remembering right. For Marvel, I think for Spider-Man, I would recommend Ultimate Spider-Man, the kind of the first, I don't know, be volume one. It's the first probably couple years where it's a teenage Peter Parker, even though it's not the main Marvel universe Peter Parker, it gives you that a kind of a modern take on a teenage Peter Parker, which the Tom Holland version of Spider-Man really draws heavily on in the movies. I think other classic ones for that are set in the mainstream Marvel universe, Kraven's Last Hunt is a classic. If you can pick up that as a graphic novel or digital comic, and then Spider-Man Blue, which is also, I'm talking a lot about Jeff Loeb here. So why don't I just do a clearinghouse of Jeff Loeb comics, because he really has these limited ones that really gets into kind of looking at the people behind the mask, so to speak. And the ones he did for Marvel are all kind of, there's a theme in the title, and they usually depict the early years of, formative years of these heroes. But there's Spider-Man Blue, Hulk Gray, Daredevil Yellow, and Captain America White. I'd recommend all those. For Hulk, I would also recommend the Planet Hulk storyline. Really great stuff. I think I mentioned that earlier. And then the Walter Simonson run on Thor, which if you can get it, probably might be easier to get it digitally, but if you can find, it's not in current print, so it's getting harder to find I think it's called Marvel Visionaries, Walter Simonson, and it's his run on Thor that gives us a lot of the stuff, again, that you see in the movies and the Loki TV show. It's the one that has the famous story arc where Loki turns Thor into a frog and he goes and lives and he becomes the champion of the frogs that live in Central Park. It's great stuff. You can't take it too seriously, but it's got some wonderful fantasy heroics and a lot of humor, a lot of heart, and it really kind of explains who, you know, really, really just makes you love Thor if you don't already love Thor. With the X-Men, it's a little bit harder because I can't really recommend a specific story. Everybody's going to say, oh, Dark Phoenix Saga. I think you can't appreciate the Dark Phoenix Saga if you don't read Chris Claremont's run up to the Dark Phoenix Saga. So I'm just going to recommend the entire run of X-Men by Chris Claremont, at least up through the Trial of Magneto. You know, that's a lot of comic books, but it's worth the read if you really want to understand the X-Men and why some of the X-Men that are you know, particularly Wolverine, Storm, Nightcrawler, Kitty Pryde, why those are enduring fans, even if they don't always, you know, I think Storm and Wolverine have had a lot of screen time in the movies, and Kitty Pryde and Nightcrawler not so much, but you can particularly find out why those other two are particularly fan favorites, and Colossus. And you get to see why Cyclops is such a great leader. I mean, you can see that now in the modern X-Men comics, but you get to see some of the format, you know, really him coming to his own there, as well as Storm as leader in those comics. Two that I would recommend that I just love, even though the author, Warren Ellis, has kind of fallen under a cloud lately with some of his, you know, and he admits he's done wrong by women he's worked with, so take that for what you want. But there are really good comics, and that's Planetary, which is a really great... it's hard to explain what it is, but it is a really great series, Planetary. And then the first couple of, probably first 24 issues of The Authority before they brought The Authority into the mainstream DC universe. I don't know why they did that. I just can't see The Authority working in the mainstream DC universe. But the Authority as it originally was, and just the independent Wildstream universe, very well written, very provoking, and probably one of the best I've seen of how they deconstruct heroes and still have them trying to help people. It's kind of people who are still trying to do good things, but, you know, a little more honest about kind of the level of violence it would take for a group of heroes to really try to save the world. And those are my comic book recommendations. I don't know if you guys want to include that in the episode because it's a little... I don't know if you want to read those for role-playing games, but they definitely will help you understand... superheroes a lot from reading that stuff, and that's quite a bit of reading, so I'll stop there before I continue to prattle on about all the great comics that have been published over the, man, we're getting close to 100 years since the, I mean, we're just about, what, 12 years away from Superman's 100 year, which is kind of the beginning of superheroes proper. Interesting. All right, well, thank you guys for what you did this month. I've enjoyed all the episodes. Sorry it took me so long to catch up, but there you go. Take care.
BJ, thank you for all those recommendations. Yeah, you know, The Authority and, the other one by Warren Ellis you mentioned that I'm just brain farting on, they kind of tie together and they have some crossover. They're both really interesting comics. The Authority basically is you have what if the Justice League decided they're going to make things right on Earth and take care of things, whether the governments of Earth agree with them or not, right? They don't necessarily set up a dictatorship over Earth, but they might as well, right? Because basically they tell the governments, F you, we're not going to listen to what you say, we're going to do what we want to do, and we're going to do what we think is right. And it's kind of interesting. And those are pretty good books, I'll give you that. Thank you for all those recommendations. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to hearing more of your thoughts as we go forward potentially with the series, as we're going to talk about here in a minute with Merck's Call. But before that, we've got a call from Spencer over at Keep Off the Borderlands, who also does Movie Monday. You know, I hope you're listening to the Movie Monday episodes, and maybe you'll consider contributing to them. It's a lot of fun, something Goblin's Henchman came up with that... You know, I supported and I hosted for a while. Then when I took my hiatus from podcasting, Spencer took it over and has done an amazing job with it since then. Basically, they pick a movie every month and people call in their reviews of that movie. Then Spencer collates all the reviews and plays them at the end of the month. And it's a lot of fun. So anyhow, let's turn it over to Spencer.
Hey, Jason, Merck, and Riley. Spencer here. Just wanted to say thank you so much for making this happen. I really enjoyed listening to everyone's suggestions, hearing about the games and media that we've all been enjoying. It was nice to hear Merck's recommendations for kids. And it was great that so many folks got involved. What surprised me the most, I think, was on more than one occasion, I thought I didn't have anything to bring to the table, but there's so much that I've kind of forgotten. I've clearly been playing in more genres than I initially thought, so it was nice to be reminded of that. I still own more than I've read, and I've read more than I've played, but hey, we're all a work in progress, aren't we? So, yeah, thanks again for doing this. I really enjoyed getting involved myself. And it'd be nice to see this continue, if possible. There's certainly a few subgenres I wouldn't mind exploring myself.
Spencer, thank you for the kind words. Interesting you say that. Let me play these two messages from Merck.
Hey, Jason. I just want to say thank you for all your help in putting this together. Also, a thank you to Riley for putting together the Sword and Sorcery episode. Thank you to Autocratic and Runeslinger for hosting and encouraging and maintaining RPG a Day. I'm glad we did this experiment. It was definitely fun hearing everybody's basically appendix N for different genres. I definitely feel like it was a celebration of the hobby in line with RPG a Day. There's still plenty of genres and subgenres to talk about, but I'll let you talk to that, Jason. Once again, thank you. And I look forward to your future projects. Welcome back and take care. Actually, I did have one more thing to say. I was listening back to the Superheroes episode, and Matt and I were talking about the Marvel Champions card game. And you mentioned Sentinels of the Multiverse. So I was wondering what other card games or board games could fit in these genres. Like, what's your top game for each of these genres? Now, I don't have like any Sword and Sorcery board games or card games that I can really think of. I know there's Conan games out there, I just haven't played them. I would almost put like Hero Quest here, but it's probably a little too high fantasy to really get that Sword and Sorcery vibes. Although Hero Quest, pure nostalgia for me, could easily be homebrewed. The rules are simple enough for that. So you could pull out the orcs and the goblins and replace them with snake men and, you know, just focus on bigger monsters and apes and giant snakes and things like that and make yourself a sword and sorcery game. But, you know, for the D&D genre, HeroQuest fits. I also have Mice and Mystics, which is kind of right up the alley. I know there's a bunch of actual D&D board games, but I haven't played any of those either. So there's that. For horror, the only one I've played is Mansions of Madness, which is very fun. With an app, you can play the same scenario over and over again because it randomizes things. It gives that Cthulhu vibes for sure. So, you know, it's the top of my horror list, and it's the only one on my horror list. For sci-fi, I don't have a lot of sci-fi games either. So what we do have is a Star Wars deck builder game, where you can play by default as the Rebellion against the Empire, but there's also a Mandalorian expansion, so you can play three-player. Last up for espionage, this may be a stretch, I've talked about it on my podcast before, but The Initiative is a fun cooperative board game slash card game with a story that is a lot of like puzzle solving, but the story is kind of got those espionage-y kind of vibes. So those would be kind of my board slash card games to fit these genres. I'm curious if you have time, if you would want to share your, not RPGs, but, you know, other games for these genres. Thanks and take care.
Merck, thank you for the kind words. I want to echo what Merck said about thanking Autocratic and thanking Anthony. Also, thanking Riley for putting together that Sword and Sorcery episode. And thank you to everybody that's contributed, either, you know, earlier in the month or here later in the month, everybody that's listened, everybody that's done the standard RPG a Day 2026 outside of what we're doing. There, you know, like the Pink Phantom has been plogging out and putting out these episodes. Joe Richter over Hindsight List put out a couple RPG episodes. BJ Boyd has been putting out RPG a Day stuff. Carl Rodriguez over The Gemologist Presents has been putting out RPG a Day stuff. There's a lot of other RPG a Day stuff out there. So check all that out. Really great stuff. As far as continuing on, so Merck and I talked about this. Merck has a couple projects that he's kind of wants to concentrate on aside from just these genre things. And, you know, he is a little bit shy and says that I have more experience in this stuff. I don't know about that. But that said, I'm happy to take on this project. So, yeah, there are some other subgenres we haven't covered yet. So maybe we'll talk about those here in the future and do some more episodes like this where we hit those. I'll have to look at that. If there's any genres in specific you want to see covered, please reach out and let me know. If you have any thoughts about anything you heard today or follow-up thoughts, please send those in and I'll continue to put out episodes as we collect calls for them. And as far as Merck's question about card games and board games that support the different genres of RPGs, and effectively, basically, that's card games and board games that support genre, right? So like D&D style board games, card games, sword and sorcery style, horror style, things like, you know, whatever, espionage. I think that's a great topic. And I am not going to answer you right now, Merck, because one, this call's getting a little, or this episode's getting a little long. And two, I want to get other people to call in. So actually I have played Mansions of Madness. That is a great game. Arkham Horror, I've got the second edition of that. I don't know if I bought third edition, but I actually have a buttload of games, board games, card games, so I could actually give a lot of feedback on that. So we'll definitely tackle that, including some espionage-specific games, so like the Agents of Smersh. But we'll talk about all that in a future episode. So everybody, if you have thoughts on card games and board games for all these genres, please call those in. Any follow-on thoughts, RPG thoughts, or media thoughts, call those in. And you know, we'll keep consolidating those into episodes and going.
Once again, thank you very much, Jason. And I'm going to echo what Jason said to thank everybody. Thank you so much for participating. Thank you for listening. It really was fun. And as Jason said, we're going to carry on the conversation, mostly over on the RPG Variety Cast. So definitely call in if you still have thoughts. And if you have board games or card games or other, maybe even video games that fit these genres, let us know. I'm kind of curious and looking forward to that as well. But anywho, thank you all and take care.